Capitel chapter 57, Cutting Corners. And this will be, of course, our last share for a few weeks, as the next two Sundays are Yontif. And while you're all welcome to join us on those Yontif's evenings, should you wish, there won't actually be a share, but probably be some matzah laying around, so you're welcome to come over and have a little matzah.
Plenty of chicken and potatoes.
Plenty of chicken and potatoes. Yeah.
Cries of enthusiasm, okay, so ring out.
You know, you're on the tape now.
I know.
Okay, we'll start off.
I'm not up to
show. All right, a lot of chicken and potatoes.
Yeah.
Okay, if you've never been here before, welcome. If you have been here before, welcome also. Tonight's capital, 57, is the first of three chapters, Al Tashches, that begin in the first verse with Al Tashches, which means do not destroy. And this is the first of the three, 57, 58, and 59. 58, 59 will continue with after Pesach, that are three in a row that David wrote beginning with Al Tashches. And we're going to see what that means exactly, do not destroy. David wrote this particular chapter after, once again, a very dramatic moment. We have seen that there are many kapitelach that were written or prompted or inspired by specific events in David HaMelech's life. And this particular event happens to be recorded in Shmuel Aleph, chapter 24. Now, Shaul is searching for David HaMelech with about 3,000 men. And they're near Ein Gedi, and they're not having any success finding David. Now, we recently had a kapitel where Shaul HaMelech was called away to an emergency battle with the Plishtim after having David surrounded. So after he conquered the Plishtim, he took up his hunt for David once again. Took the same 3,000 men and went back out. Didn't have much success finding David so far. What happened is, Shaul went into a small cave that was in the side of the road to take care of necessities. And guess who was hiding in the back of the cave? David and his men. So the 3,000 men are out scouring everywhere. Shaul HaMelech steps into this little cave, and there are David and his 3,000 men. I'm sorry, there are David and his men, right. Right. Sorry, I said that backwards. The 3,000 men are out scouring around. Shaul HaMelech is leading them, and he says, just a minute, and he steps into this cave, and there's David and David's men. This would not seem to portend well for Shaul. Certainly, David HaMelech has a right to kill Shaul in self-defense. However, David HaMelech doesn't do that. Instead, what he does is he cuts off a corner while Shaul is before Shaul notices it there, he cuts off a corner of Shaul's garment to prove that he could have killed them had he had the chance. However, that he didn't, and he cut off this little piece of Shaul's cloak. A little corner of the cloak. And then the Nach tells us what happened. Nobody tells us what happens here. Now, David's men were not too happy with this. David's men assumed that David was going to go and kill Shaul. They'd been hiding out and living like refugees and on the run for a long time. And finally, here's a chance. Certainly, halachically, there's no problem with killing Shaul HaMelech in self-defense. And the men were, they were ready to go. When they saw Shaul come in, they were hyped up and they were ready. And David said, I'll take care of this. And David went out and they were sure David was going to kill him. And David came back with a little corner of his cloak. And the men were utterly baffled by why David had done this. The truth is, the Navi tells us that David was even a little bit bothered having cut off a corner of his cloak. But he said to his men, God forbid that I should do this to my master, for Hashem has anointed him, and to do him any harm to Hashem's anointed king. David's men are absolutely astonished. But however, he told them, you may not attack Shaul. He refused to let them attack Shaul. Shaul got up from the cave, went on his way. Now, then David ran out of the cave and called after Shaul. Hey, guess what? I was here the whole time. He says, actually, my master. And he bows down to the ground and he prostrates himself in front of Shaul. So he wants to prove to Shaul that he has no bad intentions. He's hoping that he can make peace with Shaul. But David bears Shaul no ill will whatsoever. David says to him, why do you listen to the words of the people who say that David wishes to harm you? Today you have seen that Hashem delivered you into my hands and instructed me to kill you, but I had mercy on you. And I said, I will not harm my master who was anointed by Hashem to be king. Now, Father, look at the corner of your garment I hold in my hand. By cutting off the corner of your garment and not killing you, please see that I bear you no evil, I wish no rebellion, and I have not sinned against you, but you hunt me down to kill you. Let Hashem judge between us, and he will take vengeance on you, but I will not lay a hand on you. Continues to say, after whom does the king of Israel come out? Who are you pursuing? A dead dog? A small flea? Little me, David? Right? If you really want to settle this between us, let Hashem judge. Now when David finished saying all these things, Shaul started crying. He said, is that really you, David? And he said, you are more righteous than me. I have treated you badly. I would have killed you. Right? Today, you have showed me that you are better than me. Would anybody ever do such a thing? I acknowledge that you will become king. If you swear to me by Hashem that you will not come after me or my family, and David did so, and they made peace. Would that it ended so nicely. But what did David tell Shaul HaMelech? He said, you know what? Today you have seen, look at this verse is what everything hinges on. It says, today you have seen that Hashem delivered you into my hands and instructed me to kill you. But I had mercy on you and said, I will not harm you, for you are Hashem's anointed. Now David presents this argument as infallible. And the Das Sofrim explains that, you know, he puts all the commentaries together and explains it very nicely. Shaul accepted this argument. Well, David could have killed me. Instead, you know what? He had mercy on me by only cutting off the corner of my garment. But really, I was in his hands. He could have easily killed me. Later, Shaul's and Melech's advisors would say, it's not so simple. He couldn't have killed you. If he had, there were 3,000 men waiting outside there who would have killed him. And how do you know he really cut off that cloak? How do you know he didn't find it torn somewhere and brought it off and said, here, look, I found this. I could have killed you. You've been duped. And once again, Shaul would take up his pursuit of David. But after this particular occasion here, when they made peace, and when David HaMelech conquered his desire to kill Shaul in self-defense, he wrote chapter 57. So let's turn now and see what David HaMelech wrote. He said, "Lama natzeach al tashches, l'David michtam, v'varcho mipnei Shaul b'mara. For the conductor, do not destroy." It's a michtam from David when he fled from Shaul and hid in the cave. We've talked before that Lamanatzech for the conductor is an instruction actually to the conductor. That indeed we'll see this very capital, this very psalm is the source of why there are music played along with Tehillim in the Beis HaMikdash. And we'll see that the Lamanatzech is an instruction to the conductor. Now David HaMelech says, Al Tashches. Don't destroy. So the Alshik tells us that when David HaMelech's men wanted to kill Shaul, David HaMelech stopped them by standing in front of them saying, Al Tashches. Don't destroy. Don't sink to the level of the enemy. Just because they want to kill us, and they're filled with hatred and unnecessary violence, don't sink to their level. Al Tashches. Maintain our own standards. And he says, I fled from Shaul into the cave. Well, no, actually, it was Shaul who was trapped in the cave, not David. Whereas the words of the verse are a little bit backwards. It says, he fled from Shaul in the cave. Well, no, he wasn't fleeing from Shaul in the cave. Shaul fled from David in the cave. What David was fleeing from in Al Tashches, what David is struggling with in this capital, is the fact that he could have killed Shaul. He was completely justified to kill Shaul. Yet he didn't. And that struggle was not an easy one for David. Because even though it's presented here as a simple fact, nonetheless, he would have been properly proper within his rights to have killed him.
yet he didn't. So David here is fleeing, right? He's and Al Tashkais, all this is referring to David's fight and struggle with his Yetzer Hara over whether or not he should kill Shaul. For David is afraid that all of this will have a bad effect on him. Even though he has always tried to do the right thing, this is a pretty serious matter. There are 3,000 men pursuing him, and he's perfectly justified in killing Shaul. And if he kills Shaul, he can go back to Yerushalayim, he can be the king, and live happily ever after, and everything will come out just as it's supposed to. So what's the problem? The problem David feels is that Shaul HaMelech is a melech that was anointed by Hashem to rule over Klal Yisrael, and he doesn't feel that it's appropriate to lay a hand on him. Nonetheless, certainly would be a tempting thing to do. Al Tashkais, he tells his men, and more deeply he's telling himself, we don't want to sink to the level of the enemy. Just because Shaul is coming here and pursuing us and killing us unnecessarily and is filled with hatred and rage doesn't mean we have to be too. And he says, "Uvitzel kanafecha echsa ad yavor avos. In the shelter of your wings I'll take refuge until the devastation will pass." Chaneni Elokim, chaneni ki v'chach asay nafshi, uvitzel kanafecha echsa ad yavor avos. Now you'll notice he says, Chaneni twice. Chaneni Elokim, Chaneni. Favor me and favor me. Save me and save me. For David really is struggling with two things that he wants from Hashem. He wants not only help being saved from Shaul physically, but he wants help spiritually as well. Not only is he fighting with his own Yetzer Hara, his men are demanding that he kill Shaul. These are the men who have stuck with him through thick and thin, are hiding out with him in the cave, have lived off of scraps in the desert with him. And they're saying, listen, Melech, kill him. So says David HaMelech, Chaneni, Chaneni, help me in my struggle against Shaul, and help me to survive the struggle, not only physically, but come out with my spirituality intact as well. And he says, in the shelter of your wings I'll take refuge until the devastation will pass. He's hoping that Shaul will reconcile with him. See, bears throughout this entire episode, through the entire Nach, until Shaul's death, David HaMelech bears no ill will toward Shaul. An amazing feat in itself. So what he really wants is Shaul to quote-unquote come to his senses. He goes on to say, Ekra al Elokim Elyon, I'll call upon the Hashem Most High, Kael Gaimer Alai, who will finish it for me, who fulfills for me. Gomer is to be, to gomer something is to fulfill or to finish something. What does it mean that Hashem finishes things for me? Certainly David is doing his ishtadlus here. He's hiding out in the cave, he's running, he's trying to do the best that he can. And he's confident that Hashem will finish whatever he starts. Meaning that if he does this ishtadlus, he has complete confidence that Hashem will take the job from there. Now that sounds like a pretty simple matter. We all know that if you do your ishtadlus, then Hashem will take it from there, right? Well, there's a difference between thinking that and really knowing it. Now we're coming up on Pesach and the Kriyas Yam Suf, and the Medrash tells us that there were different ideas amongst the Bnei Yisrael as to what to do when they got to the Yam Suf. Maybe they should mix in with the Egyptians and try and hide. Maybe they should fight. Maybe they should go back. There were four different ideas, and everybody was arguing about what to do. And Hashem said, well, no, you're going to go to the ocean. Everybody's arguing what to do. And one guy jumped into the water. How confident was he that Hashem was going to help him? I'd say he'd be pretty confident. That level of hishtadlus, where you're doing it with an absolute knowledge that Hashem will take it from there, and that if not, you'll drown, is what David HaMelech is referring to. That's what hishtadlus really means. Hishtadlus really means not just, I'll start, and hopefully Hashem will finish it for me. I'll start it, and I'll do my part, and then Hashem will do his part, like together, we'll work it out, and you know, I'll do my part, Hashem will do his part, and we'll be a team. That's not what hishtadlus means. Hishtadlus means is that you start and you know that Hashem will take it and finish it for you. That by yourself, you're incapable. So David HaMelech knows that if he starts it, he says, well, I'm doing my Hishtadlus, Hashem will finish it for me. He has that knowledge absolutely certain, just like jumping into the Yam Suf. He knows that Hashem will take care of it 100%. He doesn't have the slightest doubt. And he goes on to say in verse 4, Yishlach mi shemayim v'yoshienu cherev sh'avi tzala. He'll dispatch from heaven and he'll save me from the disgrace of the one who wants to swallow me. Yishlach Elokim chasto v'amito. And he'll dispatch his mercy and his truth. Now he's going to punish Shaul. He wants the disgrace of Shaul. That Shaul is going to be punished. What does Shaul deserve to be punished for? For not recognizing the fact that David should be king. The Navi said, David HaMelech is the next king. But Shaul is not willing to recognize and acknowledge that fact. Now, we discussed before that it's a very complicated situation. Right? Hashem sent a very severe depression to Shaul. He's under the influence of some very bad advisors. And Shaul was a tremendous tzaddik. Nonetheless, in this particular area, he failed to be able to withstand the severe test that Hashem sent him, and he failed to acknowledge that David is going to be king, and he's going to be punished for that. And David HaMelech says, you know what I want? He says, I want chasto and amito. I want mercy and truth. I want mercy and justice. I want mercy for myself and justice for my enemies. Mercy for myself and justice for my enemies. Actually, it doesn't sound like such a nice thing. It sounds like something we would think, wouldn't it? You know what I really want? I want Hashem like to treat me really good and to smack my enemies upside the head. Yeah. Isn't that what we tend to think? All right, we tend to think, well, let's see, those people that I want Hashem to get, I want a lot of Rahmanas for me. Right? But those guys that aren't doing the way I think they should, ooh, they should really get it. So David HaMelech is saying that right here. So it seems to be that David HaMelech is expressing a common feeling that we all have, that we want our own actions to be treated with Rahmanas. But yet we want other people to be subject to the strict justice of Hashem. I can't believe he's doing that. I can't believe those people are acting that way. Hashem should really come to, they should really answer for those actions. When we do something, yourself, you tend to feel, well, you know, I had a good intention. I really hope that Hashem will have Rachmanis on me. But David HaMelech, when he says this, he means it's strictly L'shem Shemayim. The only reason that he wants Shaul to be punished is so that it should be L'shem Shemayim, that the people should see that one cannot disregard the word of Hashem and not pay the consequences. So even though it sounds like the kind of request that people naturally make, he means it on a much higher level. He wants that people should see that when Hashem says he should be the king, he should be the king. You can't disregard that and not pay the price. He goes on to say, Nafshi besok levai, my soul is among lions. Eshkaval atim, and I'm lying down with men who are on fire. B'nei adam shineim chanis v'chitzi, people whose teeth are spears and arrows, u'lishonam cherev chada, and whose tongue are sharp as a sword. Now laying down with lions, there's a machlokas in the Mefarshim who the lions are. Whether the lions are Shaul's men or his own men. The lions are Shaul's men. Suppose that the lions are Shaul's men. Because Shaul had amongst his generals, Talmid HaChachamim, and people of fine upstanding nature that should have put an end to all this. But they didn't. They just went roaring through like lions. Or perhaps the lions are referring to David's own men who had to be restrained, because they also wanted to roar off like lions. On both sides, everybody wanted to roar out like lions. Let's not think, let's jump out and attack what we see, right? Let's not think it through. So he's surrounded by lions. So I think both points are good points. Right? His own men are lions that need to be restrained, and Shaul's men should have put an end to this too. His generals were Talmid HaChachamim that should have said, listen, Shaul, enough already. But they didn't. And he's lying with people whose tongues are as sharp as swords. And this is right after the episode with the B'nai Zif, who went and told Shaul where he was hiding. And throughout David's entire life, his biggest problems have always come from people speaking badly. Whether it was informing Shaul, whether it was tormenting David about his Averus or his Yichus, that David lived a life constantly barraged by Lashon Hara that had terrible consequences for him. And in many, many kapitlach, he bemoans that. And here he's sitting, these people use their tongues as swords. And it goes on to say, Ruma al Shemayim, be exalted above the heavens, Elohim, al kol ha'aretz kevodecha, for above all the earth is your glory. He says, Reshes hekinu lifamai kekaf nafshi koru lefonai shichla naflu besocha sela. He says that a snare they prepared, a trap for my footsteps. My soul was bent over. They dug a pit, but they fell into it. Sela. They dug a pit and fell into it is an idiomatic way of saying that they always are foiled by their own plans. Every time, you would think that they would get the message by now. Shaul had David completely surrounded, yet he got called away by the police team. Shaul was within inches of being killed by David, yet he wasn't. Every time he wants to do something, all right, Hashem makes it so that his own plan doubles back on him. They dug a pit and they fall into it, and David HaMelech is amazed, but they just keep climbing back out again and trying again. They dig another pit, they fall into it. Their actions are always bringing about poor consequences for themselves. That doesn't seem to stop them. Now David HaMelech is turning to the fact that he feels that he's accomplished something significant by conquering the Yetzer Hara today, not to kill Shaul. He says, Nachon libi Elohim, Nachon libi. My heart is steadfast. Ashira azameira. And I will sing and I will make music. It's this day that David decided he would add music to the Tehillim, and that he would have instruments accompanying the Tehillim on the steps of the Beis HaMikdash, and it was decided right here in this day where he said, Ashira azameira. I'll sing and I will make music. It says, Ura kavodi, my soul is awakened. Ura hanevel v'chinor. Wake up the navel and the kinor, the lyre and the harp. Ira shachar, I'll awaken at dawn. Now wake my soul. David HaMelech was so worried that he wouldn't be able to stop the problems from Shaul from affecting his betachon and his ability to do what Hashem wanted, right? And he was afraid that this would really be a test he couldn't pass. It's a difficult situation, an extremely difficult situation, that he managed to come through unscathed. Right? That he managed to conquer his Yetzer Hara, he managed to do the right thing, and he says, aha, now Urai Kavodi, wake up my soul, you did it. Chazal tells us that on this day, David HaMelech got back a lot of the feeling and the depth and the spirituality that had been beaten down out of him by his constant troubles with Shaul HaMelech. I did it, he said. I was able to do it. Wake up, the navel and the kinor, the harp and the lyre, sing, all right, for I awaken at dawn. Because I'll tell us that David HaMelech had a kinor then that he hung in his bedroom, and every night at midnight the wind would blow through it and he would get up and learn. David HaMelech himself says he never slept past midnight. So he would go to sleep every night and he would get up when the wind came through the kinor at midnight, and he was learned. The navel and kinor, they're both instruments. I don't know if lyre and harp, we usually translate kinor as a harp. We don't know exactly what these instruments, I don't want you to get the impression it looks like a harp, like we think of, we don't know exactly what a lot of these instruments look like. But the navel and the kinor were two primary instruments that David played.
It's like the kinor today is like a violin,
no? Yes. But well, if you see pictures of the kinor, it has strings, but it wasn't played with a bow. It was played with your fingers. So we think of a harp as this great big thing that, you know, it's there. It was a portable instrument. It wasn't something that needed three people to carry around. So it's called a harp, but not a harp like we think of, you know, where it's a huge, you know, 6 foot kind of thing. It's a harp. Part. Bye. Right, so every minute we get up. Now, sometimes it helps if we pause for a moment and get a picture of who we're talking about in David HaMelech. Who is it that's hiding in the back of this cave? Imagine, if you would, you know, we have people today that excel at different things. And when they excel at something, they generally receive notice from the public. So, for example, we have people that, someone who, let's say, is an expert musician. Everybody knows so-and-so is an expert musician. He plays with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, and he's the lead violinist, and he's composed worldwide, and whenever a new composer writes something, they want this person to be the first to play their composition. This person would achieve fame, and no, they're a worldwide famous musician. We have other people that achieve fame, for perhaps example, as a general. There are many generals of armies in history that have achieved fame for brilliant tactics. They can look at a map of the world and see how the armies are moving, and they can figure out that if we go through these hills and we cut them off at this pass, I don't know what cut them off at the pass exactly means, but if you cut them off at this pass over here, right, they have that amazing tactician, and they become famous for pulling battles out of thin air when it was a lost cause. There are people that are famous for their physical prowess. We have, you know, in our days, we have sports athletes who are famous for being the strongest, the fastest, right? And they achieve great physical prowess, and they're well known for that. We have people that achieve fame and recognition in diplomacy and statesmanship. We have people that are known for making peace and being able to be world leaders. We have people that are known for their tremendous accomplishments as head of state. I want you to imagine all of those people smooshed into one. Add to that the Rosh Yeshiva, the head of the Sanhedrin, the nicest guy you can think of, and the person who gets up every night at midnight and learns Torah. That was Dovid. It's hard to even get a conception of such a person. That's the kind of person that we're talking about. And that's the kind of person that Chazal say when he got up at midnight every night to learn, it inspired everybody in Klal Yisrael. The entire nation was inspired. Well, the entire nation was inspired. There are plenty of tzaddikim to get up in the middle of the night and learn. It does not wake me up whatsoever. All right? Does not inspire. I do not say, oh, you know what? Reb Moshe, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, used to get up at 4 o'clock every morning and learn. He never stayed up all night on Shavuos. He kept his regular schedule, he would say. Now he says that in great modesty. His regular schedule was to go to sleep at midnight and get up at 4 a.m. and learn. So I know that, and I read that, and I heard that tons of times when I was a kid. And do I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and learn? Of course I do. I don't. Right? So how is it that David HaMelech was so inspiring just by getting up at midnight and learn? Because I'll say he got up at midnight and learned and inspired the whole country. Inspired the whole country. So they got up, plenty of people get up in the middle of the night and learn. People get up early in the morning. People get up and go to Daf Yomi at 5 o'clock in the morning. I tell them, you know, be quiet on the way out, not to wake me up. Doesn't inspire me to get up and go with them, does it? The difference is, David HaMelech was something more than that. He didn't just learn at midnight. He was the person that everybody felt was their guy, was the guy that they could relate to. If you were a musician, David was the best musician. The guy that would be standing there at the Chicago Symphony Orchestra deciding whether you got to move up from second seat violin to first seat or not would depend on David HaMelech, who was the greatest musician ever. If you wanted to become a general in the army, right? Wow, I want to be like David HaMelech. He was the best tactician ever in the military. If you wanted to be an athlete, David HaMelech was the best athlete there ever were. If you wanted to be a soldier, he was the best soldier there ever were. If you wanted to be a writer, he was the best writer there ever was. And if you wanted to be a Talmud Chacham, he was the best Talmud Chacham there ever was. So when he got up at midnight and learned, and he was the musician and the athlete and the writer, obviously, it inspired the entire country. This is the person that's now hiding in the back of the cave, struggling with not killing Shaul. This is who we're talking about when we're talking about David HaMelech. So I think it's helpful just to see in perspective who it is that's hiding in the back of the cave. David HaMelech goes on to say, Odechav Amim, I will thank you among the peoples, Hashem, Azamercha Balumim, and I'll sing to you among the nations. So the Amim that are referring to here are actually not the other nations of the world, but the Shvatim, the other tribes. It'll sing amongst the tribes, and then the umim at the end of the verse, those are the other nations of the world. That hopefully the other nations of the world will see, and see what it means to thank Hashem for being saved, that David HaMelech will sing amongst the nations. Now, why did they have to add here amongst the nations? What does it mean to sing amongst the nations? In fact, what does it mean, you know, we're supposed to be a light unto the nations? What exactly does that mean that we're supposed to be doing? David HaMelech is saying, I'm going to go out and sing, and I'm going to be a light amongst the nations. I'm going to show people that, you know what, I was saved by Hashem, and I'm going to sing to Hashem, and people are going to see, and they're going to understand that this is something that we should do, and that this is the way we thank Hashem, and that this is the proper way, and it's going to light up the world. So we're supposed to be a light of the day. How many people today went out and were a light among the nations? Okay. Right? Now, most of you are probably just too modest. Right? But most people don't get up in the morning and go out and do a lot of lighting amongst the nations. What does it mean exactly to be a light among? What are we supposed to be doing? Are we supposed to be going out all the time and mingling with everyone and telling them all about the great Jewish religion? Or are we supposed to be sitting at home, doing mitzvahs, and hoping that people will see what a great thing Torah is? It's going to be a question for another shir. Because it's a very, very, very complicated question. On the one hand, there are people that will tell you, you know what, you should be out among people. People should see what a Jew is, and that this is a Kiddush Hashem. On the other hand, going out amongst the people tend to have a bad influence on us. If you look through history, right, every time we go out amongst the people, we don't come back very good. Right? We go out amongst the people, and we end up being more like the people. And I don't mean the people that we want to be like. On the other hand, when we stay in, we don't seem to do too well either, being a light amongst the nations. What does it mean exactly to be the light amongst the nations? That's what David HaMelech was referring to here. We'll discuss and sure what it means exactly to be a light among the nations, and what we're supposed to be doing in order to accomplish that. David HaMelech says this, Yigodol ad shemayim chasdecha. Your chesed is so great, it reaches to the very heavens, v'ad shechakim amitecha, and up until the upper heights is your truth. Now there are actually sforim, entire sforim written on this pasuk. Because this pasuk is the source of a lot of Kabbalistic information about the Shemayim in Chesed and what it means the highest of truth. Because the pasuk doesn't seem to really make much sense. It says, your Chesed is great until the very heavens. Well, we're in a cave, really. Right? But okay, and your truth doesn't go to the heavens. Your truth goes to the upper heights. Is that higher than the heavens, or is that lower than the heavens? So what David HaMelech is referring to here is the relationship between Hashem's chesed and his emes, which is something that will also not be a topic for tonight's shir, but just to note that this is, that when you see a pasuk like this, and it seems to be, what does this mean? Until your upper heights of truth, is that the same thing as the heavens? Is that less than the heavens? Right? That, rather than dismiss it, the proper thing to think is that there is an explanation for what this means. But the explanation is often something that requires a lot more study than we're going to be able to do here. But this definitely has explanation as what the Shemayim and the Shechakim mean. Ruma al Shemayim, be exalted in the heavens, Elohim, al kol ha'aretz kavodecho. Upon all the earth is your glory. David HaMelech's constant tefillah is that the entire world should recognize Hashem. And that the glory that we're promised in the days of Mashiach should come as soon as possible. What's this about? pardon me, I'm a little under the weather here, so if I sound a little under the weather this evening, it's because I'm a little under the weather. My children pointed out it's because of my advanced age. So my daughter told me that as I'm getting old, my parts are probably getting rusty. I'm really not that old. So my rusty parts are having a little trouble this evening. But what are the... excuse me. Would you make a guess, Laura? Thank you very much. One of the things that we try to do... Ooh, are you okay? I'm sorry. Oh, chair could be replaced. David HaMelech, even in the back of his cave, when he's thinking about writing Kapitalach and writing Tehillim, he's trying to give to us a blueprint of how to lead our lives. Every single chapter in Tehillim, every single Kapitel, is supposed to teach us something. Every single verse is supposed to teach us something. But at the very least, what we want to be able to do when we say Tehillim is have some idea what it is that this Kapitel is supposed to be teaching us. It's a blueprint. So usually you unroll a big set of blueprints. Have you ever looked at blueprints? If you're not an architect or you're not trained in how to read blueprints, they don't make a lot of sense. You look at them and you can sort of see where the rooms are. But there's a lot of funny looking things and you don't know what they all mean.
So you get a general sense of it. So that's what happens when we read Tehillim. We open up the blueprints, and we have a general sense of where the rooms are. You know, here's a cathedral to stay this day, and okay, he wants Hashem to help him. We have a general idea. But there's a whole lot of stuff in these blueprints that we're not getting. So if it's a blueprint, in order to read a blueprint, you have to learn how to read blueprints. You have to study the blueprint. You have to know what all the notations mean. Same thing with Tehillim. So we'll come now to this capital, and we say, okay, good. What is we supposed to get out of this? Rabbi Rubin, I've quoted many times from his book called Rhythm of the Heart, which I can't recommend enough. He quotes from Rav Daniel Levy, who was a Rav in Zurich, who told him once, you know what? Don't make your mistakes into a philosophy of life. Taking a position and making it something and then never being able to get past that. Everything in your life becomes colored by that, and breaking that cycle can be hard. That's what happened here to Shaul HaMelech. He made a mistake by pursuing David. That mistake became his whole life philosophy. He couldn't get past that. He couldn't back up, break that cycle, and say, you know what, hold on a second. Is this really right? Is what I'm doing really right? David HaMelech was able to do that. The cycle was going back and forth, and here David HaMelech could have easily killed Shaul, but he broke the cycle. I said, wait a second. Enough here. So, normally I don't actually read verbatim from other books. I try and put things into my own words. But in this particular case, if you'll allow me, I'd like to quote you something from Rabbi Rubin, who has a tremendous way with words. He says the following. Most dramatic and tragic was the disastrous jealousy that raged within Shaul against David. Blood was spilled and families were ripped apart, all for the sake of one mistaken observation. Shaul was convinced that David sought to do him harm. And from this, everything else flowed. All the wars, years of hiding, occurred because of this one delusion. It was as if Shaul was caught up in a hurricane, spinning around him into darker and darker anger. At one juncture, it was within David's power to kill his pursuer. Instead, he cut off a piece of Shaul's cloak as proof that he could have destroyed him. But he was totally loyal to the king of Israel. Imagine what went on at that moment of decision. David's aides, David's helpers, his advisors, told him to end this once and for all. Slay the man and be done with it. But David decided, no, that would be a mistake. It would be an eternal mistake. People would see it as proof that Shaul HaMelech was right along, all along. Instead, I'm going to do the right thing. I'll cut off his cloak. He'll know what I've done. And maybe he'll be shaken from his mistaken thinking regarding me. We must admire David HaMelech's wisdom. He saw the tragic situation for what it was, a huge mistake due to Shaul's distorted perception of reality. Shaul was convinced of one thing, and he made everything else fit that mode. David wanted to break the cycle and destroy the faulty conception. From this desire came the strength and courage to act as he did. Everybody has cycles. By cycles. Everybody has things that they do, and they do them all the time, and they wish they hadn't afterwards. When they look back on it, whether it's a relationship between a husband and wife, and whether it's things that you do at work, whether it's with the children or the family, people get into a cycle, a rut, a pattern of doing things. They do things a certain way. If you ask someone, why are you, why are you yelling at your kid? No answer. Because somehow he's gotten into the cycle that every little thing with the kid he yells him about. Now if he goes home and thinks about it, he'll think, oh, you know, I really should do that. I got to yell at my kid less. And he'll reflect on that. What's going to happen the next day? Same thing. Well, you know, I really should argue with my wife less. From now on, I'm just going to tell her that she's right no matter what. And then the next day, you're back in the same cycle. People have cycles at work. Right? You go into the work and you do things a certain way. And you regret that you think, you know, I really should be going to work more on time. I really should be more careful to do what my boss says. People have cycles at home.
you know what, I really, from now on, I am going to not put my socks on the floor. All right, I know I shouldn't do that. But you get into this habit, so what I do every night, I put my socks right back on the floor at the same time. Because people get into cycles of doing things because they have some perception and they can't get it out of their mind. Shaul HaMelech had this perception that David HaMelech wanted to hurt him, and he couldn't get out of that cycle. Numerous times he came back to the palace and said, you know, we've got to stop this. This is wrong. And the next day is right out there after David HaMelech again. Everybody has these cycles. These cycles that Reuben describes like a little hurricane in your mind that you can't get rid of. You can't break out of the pattern. You can't break out of the cycle of what you're doing. Whether it's in learning, whether it's at home, whether it's at work, whether it's relationships, whether it's in your striving for things in Yiddishkeit, whatever it is, you have cycles that you can't get out of. David HaMelech, Ura Kevodi, wake up my soul, I broke the cycle. How hard that is to do. I should have just stabbed Shaul HaMelech. That's what my men wanted me to do. The lions were screaming at me from all sides. I was able to break the cycle. That's what I think David HaMelech is trying to get at in this kapitel. The blueprint here has a little mark on it that says cycle breaking. When you're in a rut and a cycle and things are happening over and over and over again and you're not necessarily so pleased with the outcome of it, you're in a cycle and rut that you can't get out of. You need to change the way you're looking at things. If Shaul HaMelech could just change the way he was looking at things, and David HaMelech did. He changed the way he was looking at things. He says, wait a second. This is not my enemy and my pursuer. This is a king of Israel that was anointed by Hashem. I have no right to kill him. Well, he really did have a right. According to the courts, according to the law, blah, 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 blah. He said, no, no, we're out of that. Right now, that's the wrong thing to do. We're going to break out of that cycle. That's what David HaMelech is trying to tell us. The breaking out of the cycle, the opening up your mind to looking at things from a new perspective. It's a hard thing to do, to look at things from a new perspective when you're used to always looking at things the same way. And we do that not only in our daily lives, we do that in Judaism. How many, you know, people tell us things all the time. If you're a man, you have to learn every minute, every millisecond. And we get stuck in that rut of looking at things. There's a famous story about the grandson of the Chofetz Chaim. He was in yeshiva, and many, many times he would come late to davening. Or even miss davening altogether. Now, probably most people here have not been a bachur in yeshiva. But if you're a bachur in yeshiva, and you come late to davening, very, very, very bad. Better you should come on time and do some other horrible thing. But coming late is just not something that you do if you want to be a successful individual in yeshiva. You do not come late to davening no matter what. Right? You can come in your pajamas, but don't come late. Who's coming late all the time? So finally the mashkiach, the altar, took him aside and said, you know, it's a famous story, so if you've heard this story before, but they took him aside and said, you know, especially you, grandson from the Chofetz Chaim, that doesn't really set a great example. You know, they don't want to come down too hard on him. He's an illustrious person himself. He's, you know, nobody wants to throw the grandson of the Chofetz Chaim out of the yeshiva. Right? That's not going to look too good in the Hamodiah the next week. You know, grandson of Chofetz Chaim thrown out of yeshiva. So he says, well, I'll tell you, I have a good reason. He says, oh, I knew it. I know it. He says, you know, on my way to work, I'm way to yeshiva. I pass a woman, and she's a young woman. She's got a lot of children, and it's really a balagad in her house, right? And babies are screaming, and kids need to be fed, and lunches need to be made, and she can't handle it all. So I've been stopping, and I've been helping her on the way. And sometimes, you know, it takes only a few minutes, but sometimes I miss davening. And the ultimate, she said, "Oh, what a gevaldik mitzvah! I'd like to share in this mitzvah too. Is this woman an almana? Is she a widow?" And he said, oh no, Chas v'Shalom, it's my wife. Right? Perspective. He had to break out of the cycle that nothing is more, who said nothing is more important than coming to davening on time? Maybe it is, maybe not. But you have to be able to break out of the cycle and put perspective onto things. Shaul HaMelech couldn't put the perspective onto it. All he knew was that David wants to get him. Right? And you get obsessed with a thought. So that you can be obsessed with a thought for the bad, or you can be obsessed with a thought for the good. If you're obsessed with a thought for the good, then you have to come to davening on time, but meanwhile, you know, your wife is at home with the Baal HaGa. There's something wrong with that. Rabbi Yaakov Zecher Tzadik Levracha used to say, you know, it says in Shulchan Aruch, and it's a mitzvah, that when they take the Torah out at shul, all little kids come up, and people come up and they kiss the Torah. He says in his shul, in order to do it, they knock half the people down on the way up. Right? He says, so in order to do something which is a nice gesture, they violate several prohibitions in the Torah of knocking people down and making people feel bad. So, you're looking at things wrong, your perspective. You can't break out of a cycle because you have to have perspective on things. Avraham Avinu is saying, take a step back from your life. Take a step back from what you do at work. Take a step back from the way you treat your spouse. Take a step back from the way you interact with your children. Take a step back from your accomplishments in Judaism, all right, in Yiddishkeit, in learning, in whatever it may be, and say, am I in a cycle that I shouldn't be in here? Let's take a step back and look at the perspective. And if I'm in a cycle, let's break the cycle. You can't break the cycle if you don't step back with that perspective. And that's what David HaMelech was able to do at the very last minute. When his men were crying for Shaul's head, the Medrash says that he came back holding his spear and they looked up because they thought Shaul's head was going to be on it. And there was nothing on it. They couldn't figure out what was going on. But at the last minute, he was able to step back and use the perspective and say, this is a cycle I don't want to be in. Break that cycle. And then, Emir Tisham, like David, we should be zeicher to be able to say, Urak Avaydi. Wake up. Wake up, my neshama. Wake up, my soul. We should be zeicher to that bracha from David. Urak Avaydi. We should look to that going into Pesach. That Emir Tisham will all be continuing this year in Yerushalayim. Questions? Yes. Comments are good too. Questions? It's up to you.
Very timely because some of us heard in the Chaya Epstein yesterday in this year about that this week, of course, is Pesach, and we talked about Yetzias Mitzrayim, and you know, with the Nekudot in Greek, you can take them away from Mitzrayim. You can read it Yetzias Mitzrayim, and she was explaining that. That means Yetzias Mitzrayim is going out of your limitations, of kind of what you were saying, breaking the cycle, going out of your boundaries, your limitations, and if you always see something one way, like you just said, so you see it a different way. It's part of cleaning out your chametz and your internal and your external self that you also, when you're cleaning that out, you start with a new perspective.
Absolutely.
So good.
That's a good summary of what you said. Well, that's why, I mean, we do, you know, people take on a lot of things at Pesach time because matzos and mitzvos are the same letters, and you're cleaning out, you know, the matzos and the mitzvos people take on to get rid of their own personal chametz. But that's a very good comment. I'll definitely keep that on the thing. Any other questions or comments? Okay, everybody should have a freilich and kosher Pesach. And Emir Tzeshem will continue the shir after Pesach with the next kapitel.